Thank you very much. Thank you, Paul, for inviting me to be here. This is an institution already in the poetic circles in Cork, so I'm delighted to be here tonight. I'm also delighted to be surrounded by many friends and many people I know, so I'm thankful for you to come and join me tonight. Yeah, I'm writing Galician, which is a language in the northwest of Spain, and it's a very old language. And it's a language with a very long history. It was a very long history also in terms of its literature. It started in the Middle Ages, when it was the poetic language of the whole Iberian Peninsula. So basically all poets from Spain and Portugal wrote in what it was then called Galician Portuguese, because back then Galician Portuguese were the same language. After the Middle Ages, Portuguese and Galician had a different evolution and a very different history. Obviously, Portuguese became a language with its own states and with that, I suppose, the prestige that is associated to the political dimension of having a state. And Galician grew up in a different kind of, with a different sort of identity. And it went through a very dark period in terms of its public dimension, public usage, between the 15th and the 18th century, when it was started to be developed again. In the mid-19th century, it went through a literary revival, in many ways, similar to the one of the, I suppose, the Irish revival. And it went through to become a language that is used on a daily basis and is very, very, I suppose it's the first language in that part of Spain. During the dictatorship of Franco, it also went through difficulties as happened in other regions in Spain. And I suppose I am the first generation of writers who went to school in Galicia and I suppose learned the language properly at school, not just in households, which I suppose has implications in the way we use the language and so on. Today I'm going to read a selection of different works from different books, so it's kind of a bit of old and new here. Starting from the second collection that I published when I was a very young fellow, more than 20 years ago, can you believe it? That was called As Últimas Ruinas, The Last Ruins. This is a poem that is called As Últimas Ruinas, and it was published in 1994, that's 20 years ago now. It has been since included in many anthologies, and I'm going to read it in Galician first, and then in an English translation by John Rutherford. John Rutherford is an English professor. He's now retired from the University of Oxford, and has been translated many works from Spanish and Galician into English for many years now, including Quixote, for example, as it was iconic works like that. So John Rutherford translated all the poetry in an anthology of Galician literature that was published, I think it was 2 years ago, in London. And so this version was published there. Oxe, a morte persiste obstinada nas pedras, nos lenzos corrompidos das paredes, sobre os xacintos do patio, nos estucos mordidos polo tempo, destrozados. Oxe, vaga a morte nas últimas ruínas, abrazando os cipreses bellos, abrazando os corpos como unha música antiga. Retornan oxe as máscaras da morte a pousarse nos semblantes desolados, a pousar a luz do abatemento no invernadoiro con dalias, nas estancias arrasadas como ceos de tornos, como templos onde o silencio cerca a pedra derrubada. Hoxe sentimos a morta baixa mar do tempo entre a enredadeira do xardín calado, no sombrío claustro onde agardaba aquel oscuro soño de amores e tapices, aquel amargo soño de horizontes e navíos. Hoxe vaga a morte nas últimas ruínas, ocultando o rostro negro nas columnas. Hoxe atopamos pedras cando buscamos rosas, procuramos cálidos ouros baixo os nardos, atopamos no corazón a cinza. Today, death persists obstinately in the stones, in the decayed surfaces of the walls, on the hyacinths in the courtyard, in the stucco not by time destroyed. Today, death wanders among the last ruins, embracing the old cypresses, embracing bodies like an ancient music. Today they return, those masks of death, to settle upon the desolate faces, to settle the light of dejection upon the greenhouse with dahlias, upon the rooms raised like Turner's skies, like temples where silence besieges the demolished stone. Today we hear the dead low tide of time through the creeper in the silent garden, in the shadowy cloister where I was waiting, that bitter dream of love and tapestries, that dark dream of horizons and ships. Today death wanders among the last ruins, hiding its black face among the columns. Today we find stones when we look for roses, we search for warm gold beneath the spike nuts, we find ash in our hearts. This second poem is from the same collection. It's a collection published after winning a competition. I was lucky enough to, I suppose, lucky or unlucky, you never know, to publish when I was very young. And in many ways, publishing has been a learning curve for me as a poet. But I didn't publish my first book when I was already well-established poet, well, very, very well-known or anything like that. I learned, I suppose, an awful lot about the trade by publishing and by kind of rereading, and reading in public helps. And in many ways, I suppose a publishing career is a career made of many mistakes. But I think it's important to embrace those mistakes and learn from them and grow from those. Excuse me. As many hours of teaching take a toll on my throat. This poem is called O Tono Pleno, and it's I suppose when we were around 20, we went to this lovely house in the countryside by the water, by the sea. My friends were big into surfing. Well, I never was. That's not my thing. So you know, they used to go out surfing, and it was a fantastic beach. Beautiful Atlantic beach. But I was never into that kind of thing, so I just wandered around and kind of looked at the sea. So this poem is kind of based on that sort of experience. It's called O Tono Pleno. Baixamos ao areal de madrugada, mentre un alento de noite pervivía, sostendo os matices escuros sobre as dunas, pendurando unha nube negra da fachada, subindo lenemente ata os restos da bella mansión desguarnecida. Baixamos o areal de madrugada, contemplamos as aves do mar que longamente voaban entre as ondas. Escoitamos as voces dos amigos penetrando o mar e os seus clamores, e procuramos na luz verdes camiños, cando a noite morría lá nas rochas e a dura vegetación do gran cantil sombrío anunciaba un día gris en pleno outono. Mi autumn. In the early hours we went down to the strand, while the last breath of the night remained, holding dark shades over the dunes, hanging a black cloud on the front, softly rising to the remains of the old undefended mansion. In the early hours we went down to the strand, we looked at the seabirds flying over waves. We heard the voices of our friends entering the sea and its clamors, and we looked for green pathways in that light. But the night died over there on the rocks, and the hard vegetation of the great dark cliff announced a grey day in mid-autumn. Well, and, as I read these poems, they actually sound to me as kind of ancient in many ways. So it actually feels kind of strange to read old poems that you have written many years ago, and in so many ways your own life and your own, I suppose, self have moved on so much from that experience. So it's like revisiting an old version of yourself. Sometimes it's not very pleasant, but sometimes it is actually very nice. This is more recent stuff. It's a poem that was published in 2006, a collection called Fundaches, which may translate as something like foundations or sediments. The translation into English is by Lorna Shaughnessy. She's a well-known poet. She's based in Galway. And she, a couple of years ago, or no, I think it was last year, she asked me to, if I was interested in participating in the Stroke Sound Poetry Festival, offering readings and translations and discussions of the translations. And I accepted the very kind invitation. So we went over there, and she translated a handful of my poems. I translated a handful of hers. And we shared the experience of discussing what translating each other was like. And this was nice, because it made us think in many ways of, I suppose, what not just writing is, but also translating poetry is like. And many of you here are very experienced translators. I had the joy of sharing with Matthew poetry translation workshop last year in UCC, and it's always a great experience. It's very challenging too, as we know. This English translation by Lorna was published in Cyprus 78, which was launched only a few weeks ago in Dublin. And that gave me great pleasure as well, because Cyprus, for reasons that I will explain later, is a journal that means a lot to me. The poem is the opening poem of the collection, and it's called Palimpsesto, Palimpsest. As you know, Palimpsest is the writing of the new over the old, and that is what the collection is all about. And about, I suppose, a rewriting of memory and places of memory. This is the start of the collection, and in many ways it's like a choir that starts. Palimpsesto. Escoito na distancia o coro que comeza, solemne, aves nos cantis, as badaladas da igrexa. O coro que comeza, semellante a chuvia que quedou nas arañeiras, envolta no silencio do entardecer, esquiva. Ruínas dun tempo alén de min, fragmentos como o ceo grisallo nos areais de outono, ou un xardín furtivo baixo o vento inclemente de xaneiro, despoxos que se perden por canteiras, lamazais bougos. Todo resulta semellante ao lene aroma da resina que se queima, transitorio, semellante a ese horror extraño. Farrapos, soidade, un tempo opaco, a vida imperfecta como unha frase inacabada, as teladas do amor, un murmullo de ocas, aquel verso incomprendido, o íntimo silencio. Ruínas, teselas de un mosaico, abrétema, o coro que comeza, palimpsesto, periplo. Palimpsest. I can hear in the distance how the choir starts up solemnly, birds over cliffs, the church bells. The choir that starts up like the rain that remains on a spider's web, wrapped in the silence of dusk, surreptitious. Ruins of a time out of reach, fragments like the grain sky over autumn beaches, or a secret garden in the raw January wind, remnants that go astray in quarries and tilled bogs. In the end, everything resembles the faint smell of burning resin, transitory as that strange horror. Scraps, solitude, an opaque time, a life imperfect as an unfinished sentence. Love's roses, the seaweed's murmur, that line no one understood, intimate silence. Ruins, the tesserae of a mosaic, mist, the choir that stands up, palimpsest, journey. The next poem is from the same collection, Fundaches, and it's the second part of a longer poem, which is called Lugares, Places. And it tries to kind of, for me, the experience of place is very important, and I have explored the idea of place and that, I suppose, the idea of sense of place in different ways, in different registers. So this poem tries to deal with my places, what I used to call back then my places. They're probably not my places in the same way anymore, but they were my places back then. So this is a poem about home, or what I suppose in 2005 was home. Estes son los meus lugares, propicios para los paseos demorados entre bruma, o fume branco nas ladeiras fragosas dos Anlois. As aguas bravas internándose na serra, cobertas polo orvalho, máis alá un perfil esquivo, o áspero tremuzo. Os meus lugares, a luz da vila beireada de montañas, unha néboa que teiga a ría nos días solleiros de outono, o templo, a ponte, a peneda con lapas onde a gaivota, o guindastre, a densa vexetación que ardería ante os meus ollos, unha noite de verán, a casa en ruínas. E certamente un sabe que no principio está o fogar, no corazón acaso, no punto de partida, mas toda consideración semella inútil, ilusoria, toda percepción velada ante a evidencia dos afectos. De xeito que as voces das crianzas nas cerdeiras, a follaxe mesta do río, o vento no peirao, as aves mariñas entre rochas, son tan só unha forma dos afectos, adición que vai conformando a miña vida, lenta suma de imaxes. Así o poema, envolto no calixeiro que recobre o pálido pasado, os botes varados no río do Porto, o camiño xunto ao mar, con argazo e punchas esmagadas, o arrecendo da madeira, pequenas cousas que outorgan sentido á miña vida, unha áncora na area comesta polo salitre ao pé do embarcadoiro. Velaquí a relación fragmentaria dos lugares que me cercan, nos que me sinto cativo como unha anguía que esbara na rede sen nunca arelar a fuxida. Velaquí os esteos da miña existencia calmiza, o ronsel dunha gamela, calidade dos afectos. places. So these are my places. Best for lingering walks in the mist, white plumes on the steep slopes of San Luis, untamed mares disappearing into the woods, veiled by the rain, just visible beyond Tremuthos' rugged outline. My places. The light from the town surrounded by mountains, a mist that fills up the Ria on sunny autumn days, the church, the bridge, the limpid covered rock with its seagull, the industre, the dense vegetation that burned before my eyes on a summer's night, the house in ruins. One knows, of course, that in the beginning is home, in the heart perhaps, at the point of departure, but every consideration seems pointless, deceptive, every perception clouded by the proof of our affections. And so the children's voices amongst the cherry trees, the dense river foliage, the wind from the harbour, seabirds among the rocks, are all just another form of affection, the adding up that shapes my daily life into a slow sum of images. Thus the poem, surrounded by the fog that covers the pale past, boats stranded on the Rio do Porto, the path by the sea, with seaweed and crushed shells, the scent of wood, small things that give sense to my life, an anchor on the sand, worn out by salpeter, by the pier. Here is the fragmentary relation of the places that enclose me, where I feel captive, like an eel sliding inside the net, never wishing to live. Here are the foundations of this quiet life, the wake of a fishing boat, the quality of affection. The next poem is called Sol de Inverno, Winter Song. It's a poem that was published in a previous collection, 2005, Ojos de Ámbar, Amber Eyes, and it equates love to winter sun. And we have a beautiful sunny day today, I suppose a winter sun day. It was a happy day. It's not happy poem. It's called Sol de Inverno. Quien escribe lembra como entramos tra la intensa nevarada, los ojos cerrados por la luz, las folerpas no cabelo, los pálidos semblantes recubiertos por esa frialdad de nova, llegada furtivamente del exterior, que penetra los aterecidos membros como un lampejo revelando una cierta perplexidad, una cena. Trátase da mesma situación unha e outra vez, baixo aparencia ben distinta. A neve, a ponte bella, a canteira abandonada á vegetación, os escuros camiños. Intactos lugares do temor que nos recolle en nós mesmos. Como o vento que pouco a pouco se vai debilitando e deixa pousado nos muros o aroma das follas, o alento do bosque, así a túa respiración, así a túa respiración ao pé do lume, íntimo latexo que captura a mirada que nos recolle en nos mesmos, que nos entrega cinza, espello tal vez do estragamento, tal vez do desafecto, o frío. O teu amor é como unha brisa entre ramaxes. O teu amor é sol de inverno. Winterson. I write remembering how we came inside after thick snowfall, blinded by its brightness, flakes on our hair, faces pale and covered with this new coldness, slowly seeping inwards, to set our limbs shivering, like a lightning flash revealing a particular doubt, a gesture. It's the same situation over and over, even when it looks different. Snow, old bridge, overgrown quarry, park lanes, and corrupted places of fear that gather us into ourselves. Like the wind that little by little dies down and drops onto stone walls the scent of leaves, the tree's breath, just like your breath, just like your breath by the fire, intimate pulse that catches the eye, gathering us into ourselves, and presents us with ash, a mirror perhaps of our own decay, of disaffection, of coldness. Your love is like wind in the branches. Your love is winter sun. I'm aware that by reading in both Galician and English, I'm taking twice the time to read half the story. Which is like, it makes the job easy for me, but it probably makes it a bit this lazy guy, for you. So I wonder, should I keep it? I just have two or three more poems. Should I keep the same routine?
Yeah, keep the same routine.
Yeah, okay.
To see where
the next poem is a poem that some of you already heard before. It was published earlier on this year. That book that Graham Allen and Pat Cotter edited, The New Eyes on the Great Book. And for those of you who are not familiar with this material, this was a response by a number of writers to the Great Book of Ireland, which is in the UCC library. I suppose it's UCC property now, after spending a fortune on it. So now we own it, I suppose. And we can respond to it. And we did. And many of us did. And it was an interesting project in that we had the privilege to look at the book in quite a bit of detail. It was presented to us and shown to us, and we could linger on a page if we were interested in a particular page. We could just take our time looking at it, taking notes, and there's an awful lot of information about this material, so it's a very rich kind of thing. It took me a long time to decide what I was going to respond to. And in the end, I decided to choose the page that is shared by the work of Piers Hutchinson and the images of, as well, the drawings, the paintings of T.P. Flanagan. Number one, because I think it's a beautiful page. And number two, because of, I suppose, a long association that I have with Piers Hutchinson's poetry, a poet that I respect very much, I admire very much, and as you know, he had a very close engagement with poetry from the Iberian Peninsula. He translated an awful lot of Galician poetry, Catalan poetry, Portuguese poetry, and so on into English. We were in touch for many years, and in a way, this response of mine was a sort of kind of a tribute to Piers Hutchinson. There is an epigraph in this poem, taken from a poem from Connemara. That's one of Piers Hutchinson's poems, included in the collection Watching the Morning Glow, 1972. It's a fantastic collection. And in many ways, not only my poem, but also T.P. Flanagan's art in that page are, I suppose, a response to that poem, Connemara, by Piers Hutchinson. The poem is called Musica Azul Contra Omeno, and the epigraph is, in these green fields, I pray against barbed wire. Esta página ten ríos, arterias como sombras sobre a tona dun planeta, vetas ou mares lunares tras dun gran solpor vermello, carochas dos bougos para máis de Connemara, mas funda un espazo de resistencia contra o medo. Aquí estían as chuvieiras e o resío da mañá pousa en vagas, en follas renegridas, latexa aquí tamén o alento dos mascatos e peneira o sol a luz de seu entre a follaxe de tres vidueiras de prata. Acalman aquí como unha música estival todas as bátegas do inverno pasado e do inverno que aínda non soñamos, mas que agoira xa o seu vagoroso transcorrer en nubes baixas. Aquí, aquí mesmiño xace o espido fluir da caligrafía de Pierce Hutchinson, cursidosa como o trazo inxel dun papo rubio sobre a ponla torta da maceira en flor que enche a relva de ledicia, pétalas, folerpas. Aquí as douradas tesoiras de tosquear aboian entre os arámios que Tippi Flanagan ergueu no medio das palabras. Pregare azul contra o silencio, azul contra os intermináveis saloucos que entrecortados chegan como un eco. Nos ríos desta páxina treme a bris de xón horrida como unha respiración tan nosa sobre a orgánica materia, unha irexa que torna documento de cultura, testemunha da barbarie, música azul contra o medo. Blue music against fear. This page has rivers, arteries like shadows on the surface of a planet, veins or lunar maria after a great red sunset, crusts of the barren Connemara moors, but it unearths a space of resistance against fear. Here, showers cease and the morning frost settles on berries, on blackened leaves. The breath of gannets also flutters here, and the sun scatters its light among the foliage of trees, silver birches. Like summer music, here end all the downpours of last winter, and the winter, still undreamt of, but announcing its errand passing in low clouds. Here, right here, lies the naked flow of Pierce Hutchinson's calligraphy, neat as the simple quiver of a robin on the twisted branch of the blossomed apple tree that fills the moon with joy, petals, snowflakes. Here, golden shears float between the barbed wire that T.P. Flanagan raised in the middle of words, a blue prayer against silence, blue against the endless faltering laments that reach us like an echo. On the rivers of this page trembles the breeze of Sean Rita, like a breath so much our own over the organic matter, an air that becomes document of culture, witness to barbarism, blue music against fear. As you very well know in Spain, as we went through the traumatic experience of a civil war in the 1930s, and the long consequences of it meant that we lived under fear and repression for many years until the 1970s. One of the, I suppose, common occurrences of this fear and repression was that many people were killed because of their convictions. And in many ways it happened during the night or early in the morning. They were taken and they were taken. The word was un paseo, they were taken for a stroll, and the stroll was basically, just a murder. And it happened typically in ditches, and there are many poems about this experience, Las Cunetas. So this poem is a response to It was published in 2006 in a book that was supposed to give voice to the voiceless of that experience and the ones who suffered the repression of the Franco regime, especially on the early days of it. And it basically combines the experience of my father, who was born just before the war, and he, I suppose, experienced the trauma of war as a child, so he didn't participate actively in it, but he knew very well what that meant. And also the experience of that trauma and that violence in the surrounding areas. The poem is called The Voice Above. Son eu, sí, son eu, a voz que berra desde as lameiras do meu recanto abeirado de ramaxes, este cimo de meu onde tremen garzas, onde abarroa un mascato. Son eu a voz irada en Fruime, en Eiroa, en Lousame, en Lesende, meu pai. Desde tan longe non sinto o trenquelear metálico cansativo das bicicletas. Cara a mina fican fiscadas nos camiños de mañá moi cedo entre silveiras. Son eu a voz que esperta en Horro, na porta da vila, en Lesende, meu pai. Ao mencer un cheiro acre nas campías, un silencio mesto de arredor, espanto tras das contras. Ao mencer espanto, corvos loucos reboan nas fochancas. Son eu, sí, a voz do escuro, en nebra, en moimenta, na albariza, en Lesende, meu pai. Sangue nun arró, nos beirais e gavias, pingas pardacentas, xanxoitas nun dédalo de sombras, azuídas marxes nas que acouga o vento, salaea a terra e treme. Son eu a voz que ecoa en barro entre os carballos de Nimo, en Lesende, meu pai. Pasar pasou o tempo, hoxe a mina pozas abatidas, foxos onde o furón fai tobo, pousa a toupa, a denosiña. Ninguén anda polos carreiros vellos, onde medra a relva, apodrecen vechos. Son eu a voz perdida no couto, na galería, en Lesende, meu pai. Ao longe, polas pistas adiante, na brete má poirenta das aldeas, tan só escoito, barulleira, a bucina, a bouxadora, a furgoneta do peixe. This is the voice. I am, yes, I am the voice, screaming from the swamps of my corner here, surrounded by branches. This housetop of mine, where herons tremble, where a gannet deeply sinks. I am the angry voice, in Fruime, in Eiroa, in Lousame, in Lesende, fam. From the distance I cannot hear the tiring, metallic jolting of bicycles. They are left scattered on the way to the mine, very early in the morning, among brambles. I am the voice that wakes up in Horro, in Porta la Vila, in Lesende, father. At dawn, an acrid smell in the fields, thick silence all around, horror behind the shutters. At dawn, horror, at mad crows flying around the ditches. I am, yes, I am the voice from darkness, in Nebra, in Moimenta, in Albariza, in Lesende, father. Blood on a ditch, on sides and canals, brownish drops, already dry, in a labyrinth of shadows. Livid margins, where the wind eases, where the earth moans and trembles. I am the voice that echoes in Barro, among the oak trees in Nemo, in the sender, Father. Time has now passed, the mind today dejected puddles, ditches where ferrets make their burrow, moles linger and whistles. No one walks those old paths where grass grows, insects rot. I am the voice lost in Couto, in Galeria, in Lesende, Father. Far away, all along the country roads, in the dusty mist of villages, I can only hear, loud and noisy, the deafening horn, the fish delivery van. I want to thank you all for your patience, and I'm going to finish with a poem. In many ways, it's probably what we all aspire to do, is not to be and this is a Borges thing, that he always said, I don't want to be remembered. I want my words to be part of the language. And I would like to be anonymous like that, not to be part of, I suppose, any canon, but for my words to be part of the I suppose, experience of everyday language. That is, I suppose, the first idea behind this poem. The second one has to do with how much we put of our own selves in the poem. Is a poem is autobiographical, or is it? Or is it about you, or what is it? So this poem is about that sort of experience. It's called A Sombra das Palabras. Agora que o outono remata e arde vento obstinado nas ruas, nos cipreses, sabemos que sempre fica unha presencia entrelazada no verso, debuxando a liña a seguir por eruditos cegos nun futuro sen futuro, revelando a vontade extraña de perdurar que nos enfronta a morte. Sabemos tamén que, a pesar da bruma nos pálidos semblantes, permanece a sombra dos nosos dedos sobre as páxinas, entre os versos, como unha música antiga ou o musgo na pedra das igrexas, desvelando unha presenza anterior que configura o rostro do poema, o noso rostro. Acaso pervivamos nas palabras, acaso sexamos tan só a sombra das palabras, mas o vento deste final de outono trae a nos o desexo do silencio, a ambición de confundirnos no máximo silencio, de ser versos, por fin, cativos no poema. In the shadow of words. Now that the autumn is over, and an obstinate wind is blowing on the streets, on the cypresses, we know that there always is a presence entangled in the verses, drawing the line to follow by blind scholars in a futureless future, revealing the strange will to live in that confronts us with death. We also know that in spite of the mist on pale faces, the shadow of our fingers remains on the pages, among the lines, like an ancient music or moss on the stone of churches, disclosing a previous presence which shapes the face of the poem, our own face. We may survive in words, we may just be the shadow of words, but this wind at the end of autumn brings us the desire of silence, the ambition to become the supreme silence and be verses at last, captive in the poem. Thank you very much.